welcome in everybody to the No Countouts Pod. Myself, Tyler Pearson, got Matt Dahlberg here. You can follow us on the Twitters. You got home base, that's Clocker Sports. You got the actual show pod is at no, or actually show Twitter is No Countouts Pod, all mishmashed together. I figure you can get that though. You got Matt's Twitter, M_Broski21.
That's right.
Get the beers. And then got myself, T_Pearson104, the number 10. And then 4 spelled out, F-O-U-R. And so this week, I'm going to try to make an effort to smile while talking just so it feels like a brighter tone than last week.
It is a brighter tone.
Man, it was a downer. But there was a lot of good stuff in wrestling this week. We had 2 pay-per-view caliber shows on free TV. We had AEW's Fyter Fest Night 1. And then a show that came up, 2 weeks ago, coincidentally, the Great American Bash from NXT, also Night 1. Head-to-head, Matt, I'm going to ask you, what show did you enjoy more?
Well, certain people may call me a mark for saying this, but I'm going to say that I enjoyed AEW overall. I think you put it best in the pre-show meeting that it may not have had the best or the most entertaining match, but up and down the card, it was just more solid than the WWE product on Wednesday.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, you could argue that NXT had the best match overall with Io Shirai versus Sasha Banks in their main event, the commercial-free hour main event, which probably played a bit into the ratings. And then you can even argue that they probably had the most technically sound match of the two cards with Oney Lorcan and Timothy Thatcher. However, it's more than what just goes on in the ring. There's a whole entertainment factor, and AEW just has that in spades. Fyter Fest, top to bottom, you had the opening tag match between Jurassic Express with MJF and Wardlow, which you had big men doing very athletic things with Luchasaurus and, again, Wardlow. I think one of the most well-built things in wrestling right now is MJF and Wardlow. I don't know about your opinion on that, but I mean that very obvious slow burn that's going, and when it eventually happens, it's going to be a sweet moment.
I think my favorite thing about not just Wardlow and MJF, but really everybody involved in this match is doing a very old school style of wrestling show and wrestling storyline. You have, depending on how you want to say Jungle Boy or Jungle Jack Perry, as JR sometimes messes up and says. But
I think he just does it on purpose now.
Who knows at this point? Just go with it, right? But anyway, MJF and Wardlow are doing a slow burn that has been so clear and apparent because we've seen this 10, 12, even 50 times before. But that doesn't mean the storyline is bad or lazy. It means they have a storyline, they can execute it well, and it can, at the end of the day, it's going to elevate both stars. That's what most storylines are intending to do. They're not, as WWE tries to do, elevate one person by just, you know, putting a foot on somebody's neck the other way. AEW is designed around getting everyone over. At least that's the plan. It hasn't worked with everybody. I'm looking at you, Sean Spears, but that is the goal.
I think AEW is the closest thing we'll ever see to PWG on the silver screen.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. It's the boys doing the booking. I mean, there's an endless list of EVPs that seem to continuously grow. And with the exception of the Nightmare Collective, there hasn't been a cringeworthy thing in almost now 9 months of programming?
Yeah.
Eight, 9 months of programming. So that's a really good track record considering their chief competition has full shows that's all cringe. Mm-hmm. So kudos to them. And then, you know, the other great thing, another slow booking thing that's going on that we've talked about is the Cody heel turn, which you talked about as kind of a fantasy booking thing several weeks back now in our first episode, and you're just looking like a genius.
I like looking like a genius. Yeah, so for those who haven't saw or just want to talk about the match between Cody and Jake Hager was really, really well done. As pretty much every Cody Rhodes match, he gives it his absolute all, like he is a main event star, even when he isn't a main event slot. He really carries shows in places where you would see kind of a down match in some other companies. Cody and Jake went at it, and it was a very, very tight match. There was just tremendous chemistry between these two. There was one point where I thought Cody did a cutter off the top rope a little bit too early, but it worked perfectly. Jake trusted that he would get to the spot, and he made it look just absolutely amazing. It seemed like he hung there for an extra 2 seconds. The finish is the part that I thought was very quick, and if you blinked your eye, you would have missed it, but it was really, really well done. So Jake Hager is in complete control. He's, you know, out wrestling him on the mat. He has him in submission hold, and it's unclear whether he moves to make it more leverage upon Cody or if Cody rolls him over. But either way, Cody has his back pinned, or he is pinning Jake Hager. The referee counts to three, but just before he hits the third one, Cody appears to lose consciousness, to which Jake Hager let go of the hold. He hears the bell, thinks he's won, and it turns out Cody Rhodes is won. What was your reaction when you first saw this?
I love when Brandy accompanies him to the ring, because that way they can get away with the Cody and Brandy Rhodes.
Yeah.
But I thought it was well-timed, expertly pulled off, much better than the hardcore turmoil one from a WrestleMania with a broken glass, with a broken candy jar and Crash being called the champ, a really hardcore one. But all right, enough of that. Perfectly timed as far as Cody losing consciousness in between counts 2 and 3, you know, and then that leading Hager to believing that he won, even though Cody's music's playing. They're handing the championship to Cody. They're waking Cody up to give it back to him. Like, hey, Cody, here's this. Don't forget this. That's going to be great. They're probably going to do that as a rematch for Fight for the Fallen, I'd imagine. And then you're probably going to see Cody use even more underhanded tactics to pull out the W.
I mean, no one's stopping him. The more this goes, the more he gets away with, the more I feel he can get away with, right? So he's going to keep pushing this envelope. So not only did he get away with a victory he may or may not have earned, but he also had one of his family members distract and actually interrupt the match, the natural Dustin Rhodes. Did he just punch Jake Hager, or he interfered with him in a couple different ways, right?
He came out after Jake's wife slapped Cody.
Right.
I will point that out. He didn't come out unprovoked. However, Arn was already at ringside, and so the fact that he came out is a little questionable. But I believe he did. I think he hit his drop down chop.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then that went into a crossroads? No. I forget what it went into, but I do remember now that JR called a rock bottom, I believe.
Did he call a rock bottom? Okay.
He called a rock bottom because that's what went into the triangle, the arm triangle.
Oh, okay. See?
Which is, oh, it's just lovely because no one's going to say anything to JR because it's JR. I do think he's better now in commentary than he was in spots in New Japan. There were points in New Japan where it seemed like he had completely given up.
Mm-hmm.
He at least seems like he knows what he's talking about. And when he knows what he's talking about, he's much more believable in his commentary. I do like what's going on with this Cody storyline. What do you think is next from this? Like, how do you think he keeps going?
So he as far as I'm aware, I think he's going to keep doing the open challenges. And I think that's where you actually might see a rematch with Jake. Jake's going to say, hey, challenge me because you didn't beat me. You won on a technicality. However, isn't Jake Hager suspended for, it's either 2 weeks or a month. So he
oh, that's right.
The timing might not work for Fight for the Fallen, but I could see where that happens. I think it's kind of just how we said, Cody's going to take more and more underhanded tactics until someone stops him. That's going to get him upset and he's going to cross the line fully.
The way you said that makes me think him the full turn's going to come him turning on Arn.
It could be. They have foreshadowed that with MJF telling Arn to slam the door on him, and we could have something like, I'm just turning on you before you turn on me sort of thing. But yeah, it's hard to know. As far as the women's match, I don't want to forget about this because
Penelope Ford's greatest match.
That's honestly, I was going to say, I've always liked Penelope Ford. She's probably the most athletically gifted ones in the AEW women's division. She's definitely one of the most beautiful women in AEW's division, in my opinion. But anybody can look at her and see she is not ready for a main event. And I was really worried about her. I thought we were going to have, unfortunately, another Chris Statlander match style where she just wasn't all there. Chris at AEW's Revolution show, unfortunately, had to follow MJF and Cody. She was really, really green in the ring. She was not being able to do her full move. She slipped in a couple areas, and unfortunately, the fans just ate her up.
Are you talking the Statlander-Nyla Rose match?
Yes, the Statlander-Nyla Rose championship match.
Didn't she come out as concussed after that match?
It could have been.
I feel like she got hurt. Isn't she on the shelf right now?
She definitely hasn't made an appearance, so that's probably right. I didn't know if she got injured in the match, and definitely in the match, people didn't know that.
Being really disappointed about that because I think Chris Statlander at the time was probably my favorite woman on the AEW roster. Just the whole alien character, and I'm a big fan of booping as well, so I was all about that. I had a question. Oh, is Penelope Ford shoot engaged to Kip Sabian?
They are definitely shoot in a relationship, or they are in a relationship, because that whole Joey Janela storyline was 100% real. Joey was really upset when Penelope Ford and Kip Sabian.
I wasn't sure about that.
Right.
So that really was a I dare not say the Chris name. and a Sullivan type of deal, or even a Matt Hardy Edge type of deal. Mm-hmm. Wow. Poor Joey.
Yeah, poor Joey. I did want to talk about this match, though, because Penelope Ford really did look really, really good. And it wasn't just like...
Two of them.
And I don't know if this is more of Sheeta elevating the talent with her or just Penelope Ford stepping up to the plate and really putting on her best performance easily in an AEW ring. It possibly the best match of her career. I didn't get to see a lot of her indie stuff, but they really did a great job. And I still have a lot of great hope for the women's division. I have no idea where they're going to go to next because Big Swole seems intent on ruining the role model's life right now. So I don't know who the next challenger is going to be, but their match was really, really good.
I think the 79-pound phenom Riho not being around hurts a little bit. I think that's what she's billed as. Something like that. Extremely tiny.
No more than 85 pounds, I can tell you that.
Yeah, she is all might, though. She's extremely exciting when she's in the ring. But yeah, that women's division is, I don't want to say overlooked. And I don't want to say, maybe they're not giving up enough shine right now. Because 2 hours is a lot of television time to fill. And if you think that, all right, everybody on that's part of BTE has to be on, that doesn't leave much time for outside.
Yeah.
As far as potential challengers go, you'd have to say Nyla Rose is probably coming back for another rematch, or for her rematch.
Yeah, that looks like it could be what they're billing her to, because she's going to make an appearance on night two of Fyter Fest. The other thing is, I think they're doing an appropriate job with the talent that they have, because they also had Bea Priestley and a bunch of Stardom wrestlers that were initially part of the roster. Because of COVID, we couldn't include them in the lineup. But you still do have a decent storyline going on with Big Swole and Britt Baker. I think there's still hope, but I don't think you can have more than one match really on this card for right now without exhausting talent with the same matches. But it's a catch-22 because everybody on that roster needs more matches to get better.
Yeah, I mean, it'd kind of be like a New Japan thing where you'd have a singles match and then whoever's not involved in that singles match in the division is an attack. Yeah, I can say I can run into a pattern like that. But the thing is, though, with maybe what they can do with Swole in the meantime and is building her towards a potential match with, you know, Britt Baker would give her a bunch of squash matches, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make another, like a secondary women's belt? Do you try to go women's tag to try to get more airtime? Or do you, I guess, in their minds, take more risk and just giving them more matches?
I think when the second show ultimately happens, because AEW has talked about that, TNT wants a second show, and they haven't talked about when. COVID probably interrupted that. I think when you have that second show, you open up a lot of more possibilities.
Yeah.
But the amount of titles you have, you have AEW title, the TNT title, the tag team titles, the women's title, and then if you add a fifth title to that or tag teams, it's very hard to do the good storytelling, well-developed, patient storyline that they're doing without having a second show. So I think for the time being, they're just using the wait-and-see approach. Talking random about Bishan...
Sorry to interrupt. Just yeah, a random thought. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do an intergender, like an open weight title.
I will say AEW has talked about they are not going to do intergender wrestling at this time. And I think with all the stuff that's happened with speaking out, a lot of people may be skeptical of looking at that type of things, both from a domestic violence standpoint and, you know, can a woman be – it's going to bring a lot of stuff that people – aren't ready to talk about right now. Switching things up, the tag team match with Private Party and Proud and Powerful with Matt Hardy at ringside in the corner of Private Party, according to him, using the playing the role of Michael Hayes when Michael Hayes was the
Hardy boys.
Exactly. What did you think about that match with Jericho and Orange Cassidy at commentary?
Jericho on commentary, second only to Asuka on commentary, in my opinion, as far as guest commentary goes. Because Asuka, just a ball of energy. I'm not plugging anybody else's channels here. I loved that they used poetry in motion and even twisted it up a little bit, because I think they went to the outside with it when they did it. And I would argue Private Party might be one of the most innovative teams as far as double team maneuvers. I just remember when they first came around onto BTE saying, oh, I haven't seen that before, or that, oh, or that. Like the silly string, the gin and juice, there's one where it looks like they're imitating Kid and Play. I forget the name of the move, but like they have so much charisma, and I hate to fall back on comparing them to the Street Profits, because neither one of them is an Angelo Dawkins, and no disrespect to Angelo Dawkins whatsoever. It's just that he's not the charismatic one of the team. Where in Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn, they're both extremely charismatic. Uh-oh. Did you mute?
I did mute. Thank you. bad habit. I do that when I'm drinking. Anyway, if you've ever seen Being the Elite, water. I'm drinking water, to be clear. When you watch BT the Elite, Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy have had some very, very out there segments with
the backyard wrestling.
The backyard wrestling with teddy bears and some weird editing stuff, but you know, in 10 years that may be the new norm. We didn't think the Hardy Boys were going to be the standard for wrestling, and now we have the Young Bucks who push way beyond that.
I personally believe those backyard wrestling segments were their buddy's own creation. That was his work of art. So like, that's him living his dreams. Go ahead and do that.
Sure.
I'm just so irritated that Buddy, I'm pretty sure, got his neck broken, but still hung on to the switch in one of those. Now, in my opinion, mm-hmm. I personally think Proud and Powerful maybe should have came out winning that one, because you can make Private Party look strong and still give him an out. Because now, do you want, you know, you have Babyface versus Babyface here with Private Party and Hangman and Kenny. Mm-hmm. My only thought is that you build off of BTE again on that, because there is some sort of beef between Hangman and Private Party. I guess that's where they're going with it, which kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I don't see Kenny and Hangman dropping anytime soon.
No, I don't see them dropping in this match in particular. I feel like there's always a really good amount of build-up just when a storyline advances. You saw the amount of build-up when Hangman and Kenny had the match with the Young Bucks. There were months of build-up for that, and it was really, really great. For them to win it on the second night of Fyter Fest almost wouldn't feel like a big enough payoff for either of them. I think it's too soon to put it on Private Party, and I don't think we've told enough stories as the tag team champions with those two.
Who takes it off of them? It's FTR, right?
Yeah, I think it's either FTR or the Young Bucks, and it depends on how Kenny and Hangman get along. If they start to deteriorate and they're really coming apart early, then I think the Young Bucks actually take it off them and kind of tear it off more. If they're doing well together, I think FTR just beats them, and that's what sends them both into the singles division. But again, just either one of those teams is good enough to hold the belts. But I can't wait for this coming week where FTR and the Young Bucks go face-to-face as a team versus, was it Butcher and Blade and Pentagon and Rey Fénix. Finally, we'll get to see Rey Fénix back.
Which I did not see that coming at all. Which kudos to AEW for keeping that one under wraps. However, with Fénix and Pentagon coming in, it almost guarantees they win, right? They don't really lose in AEW.
They're very good. And we actually have to talk about the main event that actually happened on the AEW's first night of Fyter Fest, because we actually didn't do enough of a job telling what a good match and what a great intro the Best Friends had.
I think I said this before, the best theme song in AEW. I have it added to my Spotify. It came on my daily mix the other day. The wife didn't even know it was wrestling music. I feel like I got away with one, but yeah, great entrance, being driven to the arena by Trent's mom. Mm-hmm. And then Trent still game face on, going back to get a kiss from mom. Mm-hmm. Just lovely. It brings a tear to my eye. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Best Friends, I don't know if they ever will put the titles on them. And honestly, I don't know if they ever need to. But if they do, that moment, the entire crowd will collectively need a cigarette. Mm-hmm. It'll be the big hug. You're going to have Orange Cassidy there as well. It'll be a moment and a half. And say they eventually take it off from a Dark Order, who do come to a full head at some point, that would be a huge moment. But yeah, that entrance, man, great entrance. That entrance made me think they were actually going to win.
It felt like, you know, a WrestleMania moment, that we used to have these really special entrances for the big stars, the John Cena's, the Triple H's, the Undertaker's, where there was an entourage of some sort with you. But I think this is the first time we've had a minivan with your mom pull up for a main event fight. It's just so Best Friends, and they put on a great match as well.
Oh, I as I was saying, like, you know, the best friends made me think about what I just said about Private Party as far as being innovative with double team offense. The soul food into the half and half, and then there was a dive. I think there was a suplex on the outside. That was Kenny going into Adam Page. It was all just smooth and so crisp. And Malcolm Bivens just robbed a man of his last name, but it's still Chuck E. T. You know, that man is a great wrestler. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Trent. Trent question mark is a great wrestler. Chuck right. Taylor, the Kentucky gentleman. And, you know, they're like wrestling pizza. Like, everybody just feels good when they come around. You know, like, oh, it's the best friends. Yeah. but, damn. Are Kenny and Hangman a story of two great singles wrestlers just finding a niche as a tag team? If you just consider just strictly AEW, because, yeah, they work together in New Japan, but I'm not sure if New Japan is canon in AEW.
It is, because BTE is canon, and BTE is okay. NJPW. But here's what I will say. I'd compare them to the Odd Couple. It's like they're opposites. One drinks milk, and one drinks hard liquor. One plays video games, and one does cowboy stuff. And
one pours out beer, you know, and not for the homies.
Right.
Starting a fight. I do think the Bucks are probably what, now that I think of it, I think it is the Bucks that take the titles off of them, and it turns into a six-man tag of FTR and Paige. Okay. And then you get interference from Cody. Which side is he on?
Yeah.
And then you get the resurgence of the Four Horsemen.
Whoever wins the six-man tag, or I'm sorry, it's the eight-man tag on Fyter Fest Night 2, has a inside track at the next number one contenders. So I almost think that FTR and the Young Bucks are going to lose because they have to continue their feud. And if they win, where's the tension between those teams? I think it's up if they lose.
Yeah, because if you have them lose, you have the two winning teams tag against each other for a number one contender shot.
Okay.
And then you build Bucks versus FTR. And then they would eventually tag against each other for a future number one contender.
Yeah, it wasn't just great wrestling, great storyline, but we also had shots called in the middle of Fyter Fest about talking about a very different promotion in WWE. Taz, the commentator, manager, and all-around voice for WWE in a bunch of capacities.
Human suplex machine.
Human suplex machine. I will never take that away from Taz. Thank you for reminding me. Taz had some words for WWE, or in reference to WWE handling the COVID situation. He referred to them as, what was it exactly, a sloppy shop?
Well, they said AEW was not a sloppy shop. Because they were telling John Moxley that he will proceed to get tested several times. And then Brian Cage just stating the obvious with the finger guns in the background. Like, oh, really? That was a shot taken? Who would have guessed? I just don't get why Vince's House of Muscle had to get all heard about this. It was very public news that they had several people test positive. And even furthermore, before the positive test, they had people blowing the whistle on the operations there beforehand. So the fact that a competitor points out your lack of concern for your independent contractors, you shouldn't get mad about that. Like, clean up your house first before you say someone says it's messy. You know, like, that, I was almost expecting legal action, honestly, when they came out and publicly said that they were upset about that. But if they take legal action, they're admitting that they were messing up themselves. So maybe that doesn't happen. But yeah, shots fired. And I don't know, people say AEW take too many shots at, you know, WWE. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think you can take as many shots as you want as long as they're well-timed and within reason. I think sometimes the Brody Lee stuff was a bit too much. It was kind of redundant. It was like, yeah, Vince is a bad dude. Yeah, we get that. Mm-hmm. Other things, I don't think we can point out enough how terribly WWE has mistreated wrestlers. And it's not just the COVID situation. It's not just the testing situation. It's also with people like Kairi Sane, who has been injured on multiple occasions with some of their employees or independent contractors not being very safe with them, and there are no repercussions.
There's also a history of firing people on their wedding day, but accidentally sending the papers through that date. You know, they're very petty themselves. Mm-hmm. So I figure it's fair game. This is the same company that on 2 weeks' notice came up with the Great American Bash once Fyter Fest was already announced probably a month in advance as a two-night event. So they very much are petty themselves. So I don't know why they're crying foul here. It makes zero sense. And then you did mention some kind of sad news as well with Kairi Sane. I we'll get to that in a second. I think we should probably maybe mention a little bit of night one of the Great American Bash.
Because
I did mention that top to bottom Fyter Fest night one was the better card. They had the match of the week, I would say, on NXT with Sasha Banks versus Io Shirai. It was just a great crisp match, and it brings up the question, is Sasha the most talented woman on the WWE roster?
For me?
Like, just as far as in-ring ability.
Just in-ring ability? I've always thought Sasha does a great job in-ring, but what makes Sasha so good for me is her boss character. It's always been a top-tier character. Going back to her, actually, exclusively going back to her days of NXT, she was easily the best heel in pro wrestling, I would have to say, of certain times, because she was such a smart heel, and she was just so glamorous and sassy. And I know a lot of people who didn't even like wrestling, but got back into wrestling. I had a friend in Illinois media school, George Norwood, got back into wrestling because of the Sasha Banks character.
I've talked with George about the New Day. I remember that.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the legit boss heel is so good that it dampens Sasha as a face, because it just has never clicked for whatever reason. I don't like her taking Matt Morgan's nickname. That just seems like a bad idea, calling herself the Blueprint.
Well, she can't do a worse job than Morgan.
True.
She can elevate that gimmick. Maybe she can elevate it. You know, he is a he's like a mayor now of like a Florida county or city or something.
It's Florida.
Are you really surprised?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I'm not. That makes either Florida or California, I would say, for Matt Morgan. Just muscles on muscles with bronzer. Six. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right.
I just get reminded time and time again about how deep her bag is in the ring. You know, she pulls a Meteora from anywhere, from the apron, running from the ring, the turnbuckle, anywhere she wants, so she'll pull a Meteora. And me being not even 30 with awful knees, cringe every time I see her do it. There was one I remember she had a couple years ago that was to the outside from the turnbuckle. It was just like, wow, what are you doing? You know, and like I do not joke. Like, for as much as I love Asuka in ring, for as much as Io Shirai is a technician, you know, there is so much great women's wrestling on that WWE roster. I still feel like I did just say WWE roster. I'm just going to move right past that. I still, there are just some times where I just feel like, yeah, no one touches Sasha. And for every frog splash she pulls out, I'm waiting on her to pull out the Three Amigos.
Mm-hmm.
And she hasn't done it yet. I'm waiting on her to do it. For as much as every time you hear her mention, anyone, someone talks about her influence being Eddie. And I just haven't seen her do it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
that match is great.
Yeah, I think that's probably a WWE thing, because if you're, I think they say if you're Hispanic, you can do the Three Amigos, or that's what's implied. If you look at who does the Three Amigos and who doesn't, it's sometimes like that. I'm not saying that's how it happens. It wouldn't be surprising to me, from the same wrestling company that brought you Yokozuna as a Japanese sumo who is a Samoan, that they'd be a little bit more, we'll say, insensitive about who uses what moves, we'll say.
Yeah. I mean, but like, if there's anybody on that roster,
mm-hmm.
you know, it would be Sasha.
Oh, absolutely.
There
are no more Guerreros.
Well,
on their roster.
Chavo's somewhere. Chavo's always sure. somewhere.
No disrespect to Chavo. He is a great wrestler in his own right. But the last time we saw him, he had blonde hair and looked like Sammy Sosa. So
how recent was this?
On last time we saw WWE television, to be clear.
White.
Yeah, so sorry.
Oh, because like I think he definitely was in Lucha Underground.
Oh, yeah, no, Chavo is a great worker, and he can get a job anywhere he wants to.
But yeah, that Sasha Io match, did the ending taint it for you? Asuka getting involved?
I don't know. I try not to, when I watch WWE, I don't try to get invested. So I also don't feel as much when things happen. And so I kind of look at it from an outsider's perspective. I'll let you kind of give your thoughts on that, because I'm really wishy-washy on most stuff.
I get it that they're building the Sasha Asuka match. So of course Asuka's going to get involved, but for Asuka to directly affect the outcome, maybe not. You know, because it was a mist that led not to a roll-up, but a mist that led her prone, and she caught the moonsault to the back, which was that. And then I feel like you could have had Asuka be involved and not lead directly to the end of the match. Mm-hmm. If you could have had Bayley get involved somehow and Asuka come out to usher Bayley away, that probably would have been a smoother way. But I don't think it actually dampened it, because what they did overall was so great. I would say it was the best match WWE put on this week. But I'm sorry, I'm just so distracted about this Kairi Sane thing. All right, I'm gonna get to this real quick.
Yeah, let's take it at.
So you heard Matt mention earlier about their WWE's not necessarily greatest care in Kairi Sane's case. You had her twice in a, what, 5-week span, 4-week span, get injured by Nia Jax. On pre-recorded shows, mind you,
mm-hmm.
spots they could have stopped and like, hold up here, that doesn't look quite right. There was the corner turnbuckle spot where I think you can hear Kairi yell, "I'm not safe." And then the spot that I think actually got cut from TV was the powerbomb spot, or the spot where she cut her head on the stairs on the outside. And so you haven't seen Kairi Sane on television since then. And now reports are saying that Kairi Sane is no longer with WWE. Cultaholica reported that there were talks of her possibly being in some sort of a ambassador role for a potential WWE NXT Japan. Because there were talks of them doing that before. They were going to do some sort of ambassador tour with another promotion. It wasn't DDT, but I forget the promotion, but there was another promotion that was supposed to be involved. And of course, with COVID, that has gone kaput. And so there were thoughts on, you know, she was going to go away to Japan to be there when they were to start up over there. But now, apparently, she might not be wrestling at all. And given her recent injury run, not even just the stuff with Nia, it goes back to the TLC match where she also suffered a concussion. I don't blame her for really thinking about this and like, maybe I'm done. Because I'm sure she got the WWE money now. Her contract's probably almost up as is. It's just sad because it was unquestionably the best elbow drop in the game. And one of the few genuinely fun, innocent gimmicks in wrestling. The Pirate Princess. It's just a bummer. And, you know, we've been talking a lot of bummers lately, but this is someone's career getting cut short way sooner than needed to be. Which is kind of sucks. Because part of it sucks because she had just got called up recently, and there was the bitterness there because WWE isn't great with calling up people, as we know. So they just kind of shoehorned her into a tag team and forgot about her. When she was just the NXT Women's Champion, having burned down matches with Shayna Baszler. But that's another person that apparently just lost their way due to creative on the main roster. And it just absolutely sucks that you have these characters get built so carefully in NXT for several years and then just get thrown away like a Kleenex when they get called up. I'm sorry, called over because it's the third brand, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's...
In the same way ECW was the third brand in the late 2000s.
Oh.
Where you have Colin Delaney and Tommy Dreamer, no offense to them, being beaten down by whether it's Kane or some actual SmackDown or Raw superstar. They just use it as a squash match half hour or whatever it was.
Or Matt Hardy or Mark Henry or CM Punk, whoever they're trying to get over.
Bobby Lashley, I mean.
Yeah, can we not talk about WWE, ECW? Yeah.
You know what? Let's just move on. Actually, speaking of memories, I think we have something that will be a little bit brighter, but it is a little bit about wrestling history. It's a little bit about, you know, us as wrestling fans. We're going to spend a little time talking about what are some wrestling moments that meant a lot to us. Now, this could be at a live show. This could be watching at home. This can be even with a fan interaction where you talk to somebody at a grocery store. Back when grocery stores, you could talk to people without feeling uncomfortable within 6 feet. So we're going to end the show, kind of wrap it up, talking about just stuff that makes us happy as wrestling fans. Tyler, let's start with you. Where's a moment, whether it was recently or a long time ago, where you're like, yeah, it feels good to be a wrestling fan?
So it was actually a moment where I kind of questioned, am I a wrestling fan now? I'll take you back to Bash of the Beach 1998. The main event was not the undefeated Goldberg versus Kurt Hennig, but it was Diamond Dallas Page teaming with Karl Malone, taking on Hulk Hogan and Dennis Rodman. Me, not really knowing that much about wrestling, being summer of 98, I was 7, and knowing very well about Dennis Rodman and how much I hated Karl Malone. So I was all about that. Little did I know, 7-year-old me was a heel. I didn't know that. History tells me I'm a bad guy, apparently. But the memory I'm actually going to talk about is one of my first wrestling memories. It's from that pay-per-view earlier on the card. It was Goldberg, undefeated world heavyweight champion Goldberg, taking on Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. And Kurt Hennig, in his entrance, so earlier in the night, he had an interview where he was talking crap about Goldberg and going on about how he was going to end the streak, right? So when he's coming out, you had the camera that was real tight, and he's actually talking to the camera about how he's going to beat Goldberg. The streak ends tonight, Goldberg. I got you, bald man. And then he spits his gum out and smacks it when it's still in midair. And I'm just thinking, wow, this guy's actually kind of cool, you know? I hope he gets beat up here, but he's actually kind of cool. And he got squashed in about 90 seconds. And I'm like, I can really get into this thing. And that was just kind of one of the first moments of me seeing like, oh, okay. What is this wrestling? I think I like it. So yeah, I actually started off as a WCW fan because of Goldberg.
That's a great place to start. Man, that's... I actually
Marking me now kind of laughs at myself back then. But naively, yeah, it was a great place to be.
Yeah. I mean, that's right. You know, anytime where Goldberg's big in the late 90s, it was when WCW is actually doing something right. You know, they can never do everything right, but they do know a couple of things, what the fans like. For me, it's actually going to be a memory a little bit more recently. I actually had forgotten about this until I saw the Best Friends versus Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. I was at a Chikara show in Chicago. It was either 2016, 2017. And I, you know, me and a few friends went downtown. We wanted to watch a wrestling show. I said Chikara would probably be a lot of fun, especially I had somebody who hadn't been to a wrestling show before. And I thought it'd be a nice intro to them, something where they don't take it too seriously and just, hey, this is a fun show. Chikara is kind of like a comic book. There's some like superhero lucha stuff. And there's also some really good wrestling as well. So at the time, Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor were teaming up, and Orange Cassidy was, I believe, a guest member on the Kentucky Gentleman Show, which is a really old YouTube show, if you could look it up. So it was the first time I'd seen him, and we got to watch him wrestle. They did their usual Orange Cassidy shtick. They didn't even win, but they put the other guys over. And that's usually what Chuck Taylor does when he goes to Chikara. He puts younger talent over. And I, at intermission, I bought one of Chuck's shirts. He was talking to somebody else, so I decided to talk to Orange. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. No.
Okay. And I talked to him because Chuck was making a retirement tour at the time. And I was saying, Chuck, how can Chuck retire? He's so good. He's so funny, charismatic. And I was talking to Orange and like, is this a work? Is he really retiring? And Orange told me his mood actually dropped. It was like, yeah, man. Yeah, this is kind of a Chuck's last run. It was November. And I think he said this was his last year wrestling. He had gone through, I think the Chuck Taylor Shoes was like suing him, or there was some legal dispute about his name. All his friends were in New Japan. You know, they had the Bucks, the Bullet Club.
I think Trent was out there at the time too.
Yeah, so he's kind of by himself doing his own thing, and he's kind of lonely. And I was like, hey, man, anything you can do to convince him, please do it, because we love him as fans. And then I got to talk to Chuck, said, ask, hey, can you sign my autograph? And like, hey, I just want to know if this is the last time I see you. I really appreciate you as a wrestler, and just thanks for coming out and making things awesome. And we actually had a nice little hug, which is
cool.
I know it sounds so dorky, and I kind of hate it.
Best friend, that's not dorky.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of got in on the best friend's gimmick early, as I like to say. And later that night, I followed him on Twitter, and I got to see a tweet on there. It just simple. It was like, I love wrestling, and I was like, yay! I don't care if I don't care if I made his day, but he made mine. And hey, he didn't retire, so. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a feel-good moment right there.
It's such a feel-good moment.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Pro wrestling really is, when you break it down, the best moments in pro wrestling are about feel-good moments. And that's what even our pro wrestling podcast should be about most times, is the good stuff that comes from pro wrestling. You know, there's going to be controversies and things we have to address. But at the end of the day, why are we watching pro wrestling if it doesn't make us smile, laugh, or entertain us?
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, it's so good. So, from all of us here at No Countouts Pod, I'm Matt Dahlberg. You can find me on Twitter at @m_broski21. This is Tyler Pearson. You can find him at t_Pearson104. It's the number 10 and the letters FOUR. Almost forgot how to spell four. Tyler, any last words for the fans?
No, actually. All right. Let's get some great night twos coming on with Great American Bash and Fighter Fest. Let's have some epic night twos.
I agree. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week on No Countouts Wrestling Pod.